Tonight, as we speak on the subject, the wave of the future, we're looking forward to certain inevitable facts that are soon going to be made manifest as patterns of history. We're also consciously aware that there are certain things that we must face and we must recognize, and that is that you can never return to yesterday. Therefore, with the inabilities to return to yesterday, we must shape tomorrow better than our yesterdays and not permit tomorrow to run into the pattern of operation that may have brought about yesterday's destruction. I find a certain design upon the part of many good people to think about the good days of yesterday. And as they think upon it, they tell us about how wonderful it was before the subversion, how wonderful it was before the powers of darkness made their way in, and how can we return to those good days. But I'm going to tell you that you have been in a steady conflict ever since your race has been upon the earth, a conflict for the earth in which you have emerged from one man's family to a great company of nations tonight. That this company of nations are made up of the peoples out of your race who by the causes and frictions of history and the patterns of destiny have formulated and by their patterns of migration development the great nations of the Western world. The forces and struggles through which they have passed have helped to shape what we call today Western culture. And it is important that we bear in mind this realism, that we are a part of a late living force and stream of life. That this living stream is a racial stream and a family stream, and the most important pattern of its retention, which is a spiritual force within it to carry out its destiny, its objectives, is a spiritually designated racial self-respect. I point out to you that we are facing a combat for the mind, which while seeking to overthrow all the established institutions which it recognizes as an obstacle to its world domination, seeks also to get an acquiescence in the minds of those it seeks to conquer, that it inevitably must embrace that which challenges it and which has been a byproduct of destruction during the period of its history. And these, we are told, are inevitably the things we face, waves of the future against which there can be no resistance. The other day I listened to the voice of a political leader in close affinity to the president and administration who has an open door in and out of the White House and more influence than he should have, definitely than he should have in this country. And in this he was talking about the inevitable need of the acceptance of leadership, of their responsibility to the people, to just go ahead and mold the world in the way it should be molded because the people no longer are capable of molding it for themselves. And what we were being told in so many words was that a few people around the president have a corner on knowledge, wisdom, and intelligence, and that we should accept the fact that they, with their better preparation and their better information, as they would have us believe, and possibly their superior intellectual abilities, as they would also like to have you believe, know what's best for you and what's good for you. And therefore they suggest that they should just assume this authority with the same dictatorial absorption of authority that we've watched in several administrations seize power and portfolios of government, utilize its pressures upon the various branches of government until Congress and Senate capitulates time after time and passes portfolios of authority into the hands of the president and the super brain trusters that have evolved into new frontiers and now not satisfied with seeking to wreck America, want to rule in the world. And I point out to you that these forces came into America. They were not nurtured here to begin with. They were forces in conflict with your race that had no actual part with that race other than that as the parasites they lived upon it. And as the strategists of those that would overthrow your way of life, they have waged warfare upon it constantly. That is no doubt that as we face these situations, that there are certain factors that you and I possess in knowledge that are not always evaluated by the statesman, if you would call him such, without this vision, by the political figures and the leaders of authority and power in their struggle for the earth. We have not only a blueprint that determines tomorrow, but we have a person involved in this, in the being of God, that having understood by his declaration what his plan constitutes and what the end of these things will be, we are in better position to evaluate our relationship to these conditions and our relationship to expending both our energies and our directivity in the course which inevitably he has outlined as one that will take place. Now we recognize that the average politician, the average official may have been inspired to a certain degree in his education and his background by high principles and ideals. And he was born with the same wave of the flag and the same beat of the drum and the same background which stirs deeply into the emotions of every true American. And when he presented himself in his position for candidacy to high office, he intended to discharge a full responsibility to these principles. And when he got into the avenues of government, into the positions where he would express his energies, he discovered that there were other powers in the seat of government that had been there and he hadn't known about it until he arrived. He may have discovered it during his election campaign. He may have been suspicious even during the periods of time of his own selection when they were suggesting how much value he might have been to those that would help his attain his election. But when he arrived in positions of high authority, he found there were forces in both parties that were not interested in the necessary principles of party or party line. They were interested in a basic objective, and that seemed to be to bring the whole nation under an economic and political subordination and utilize all representatives that they could gain over in their corner, promising them that this was the only way to a political secure future and a relationship with the overwhelming authority of an establishment which was to last forever. I know a great number of congressmen and senators who have expressed a great disgust at the fact of the rottenness, they said, that existed in statesmanship and in political life that they had never dreamed was there. And each one expresses how he hopes that he can clean it up and that he can last and survive while he does it. Though I've talked to a few men inside of your nation who were great men of stature and senators of great repute and who did their best in areas of combating the dark who actually just pulled out and went on home and get out the mountains, so to speak, because they said it's too late, we can't resist it. This is an irresistible wave of darkness coming over the earth. It's too late. I noted one individual who, as a sort of philosopher, was considering the inevitable wave of forces it would involve and said, when these inevitable waves reach the point where you see there is no resistance, the most you can do is dive into them and then float with them up upon the beach and hope that out of it that you will find some pattern of survival in which to reshape your life. But I know of more powerful waves of irresistible force that are involved in the destiny of Earth. Great wavelengths of energy and power that are going to make a more final determination as to the things of Earth than any physical force that you now see manifested. I can also assure you that there is going to be the greatest rebirth, and it's already starting inside of your race, the greatest rebirth of the remembrance of your origins, of pride in who you are, and of assumption of basic responsibility. And I tell you, from what people thought was the trend, the great hour of a rebirth of racial self-respect and a determination to preserve the culture which you have inherited is going to descend upon you. But I want you to remember that you cannot pour it back again into the old mold, and you can never build yesterday as it was yesterday. And it's good for men to talk about the days which they enjoyed, but do not for one moment believe that you're going to, in the successes of tomorrow, make tomorrow fit yesterday's mold, because there is a great continuing progression that out of each one of these challenging forces of experience through which we pass, develop a higher perception, a greater insight, a greater range of power, and a greater range of knowledge. And you could no more return to the early yesterdays of your forefathers then you could give up the automobile and the airplane and take the covered wagon. So recognizing these factors, we do not adapt ourselves essentially to any condition in our environment, but as co-creators with our Father, we reshape both the conditions within this environment to be adaptable to a better tomorrow that fits within the framework of the destiny which, with the vision God gives us, we are going to build. There is no doubt that great challenging forces have emerged in the world during your lifetime. that we have watched such challenging forces in the panorama of history throughout yesterday. That as we have migrated as a race, remember there was a time when we were only one man's family. And all around us, outnumbered by the millions, we were still one man's family. And at that time, we were in problem and we were in danger. And it wasn't long before members of that family knew they were surrounded by a hostile world that didn't want to see them achieve the ultimate direction and ultimate attainment that was a part of their prophetic destiny. So recognizing this, we were not only in challenge, but we were in danger. And we could have heard the voices of yesterday say, how are we going to survive this condition? But there has never been a crisis through which we have passed that there has not been enough vision that God raised up to carry us through. We spoke to you last Sunday night. We mentioned that in the book of Micah, in this very hour in which you live, in which as the great nations of God's kingdom can be seen as great nations of power and distinction, they are the half nations of the world that have vision and spirit and have faith in His person and in the foundation of a civilization which His Spirit inspires. But they have before them the onslaught of all the pagan powers and all those that were designed to absorb the earth and reduce it to an area of slavery. That in this process they would gather the superstitious hordes of the earth, they would gather the races which are not a part of your household and who are considered to be have-not nations for a lack of initiative and vision and because of the exploitation of the tyrannical forces and evil superstitions that have dominated them. And they would hurl them, according to Micah the prophet, against you. And God said it will be in a day when there will be a daughter on the throne of Israel and there will be a woman on what was Davidic throne of time and destiny. So you know about the time that is because you're in that kind of condition now. And he said in that day throughout the nations of the kingdom, throughout his people, that God would do something. He would raise up, as we mentioned, seven shepherds, which means that in the areas of spiritual directivity and among the clergy, he would raise up seven spokesmen and voices. He would raise up eight military leaders as principal men. And this would be essential in meeting the wave and the threat of the great forces of pagan power designed to overthrow your way of life. Inevitably, therefore, we were told before this hour happened of the conditions in need that exists in the omniscience of the Most High and the proclamation of revelation and in the ability to unveil to the prophets and to men of your race the intent of God in meeting conditions and telling you what's going to happen before they come to pass, one of the most valuable assets that an individual may possess today. And thus we are well aware of the crisis that is before us. There are inevitable waves of destiny according to the amount of energy that's going to be poured in to meet it that prophecy unveils. These are inevitable. It is not, my friends, for you to fight, therefore, against the inevitability. It's for you to adapt yourself to that inevitability and be triumph through it as you move into it. Someone said, Dr. Switzer, it wouldn't be good, would it, for nations to govern their futures by the prophecies of the Scripture and then move in to occupy and participate in the areas of that prophecy which they're a part of? I think that would be the wisest thing that we have ever had. At least we'd come out of it with a foreign policy and nobody knows where we're trying to go now. I can assure you this, that even these things are going to be adjusted, which may mean the removal of some and the elevation of others. But you can be well assured that you are going to follow this blueprint. Someone said, how do I know that this is a good blueprint? Because it's a better blueprint than the world has to offer. I look back over some of the conditions that have gone by and I see the hands of evil powers, of dark satanic forces that fought against Christ during His ministry, but have been fighting against the peoples of His kingdom even before the advent of Messiah. I see Jesus turning to those that were His enemies and identifying them with the age-long struggle from the days in which Lucifer sought by absorption to destroy your Adamic family. I see Jesus not only knowing the thoughts of their minds, but knowing the pattern of their intent. Not only denouncing His enemies, but leaving a permanent record for you in the book of John and throughout the records of the Gospels as His apostles followed His direction and recorded what happened. So that you might recognize that even though God walked the earth in the midst of His people, there was no less animosity from the powers of evil concerning it. And I can hear some people say there isn't any sense in opposing these Jews. are going along with their political chicanery as it relates to the powers of Rome. They're too big. They're too strong. The empire is going to support them because of the economic stranglehold they have upon its leaders. It's just too late. And there's no sense in this small impact of Christianity trying to move out and resist such a force. The best we can do is just coast along with it, give it no resistance, keep our secrets to our hearts, and die and go to heaven. But you didn't do it that way. Strangely enough, there was a dynamic force to continue to bear testimony, to continue to move out, to continue to reach people, and with it was a continual resistance against the forces of darkness. Well, you say they were martyrs? Yes, they were martyrs, and they were also warriors that died in the fight. There were those that remembered what Jesus said, what he said, if you don't have a sword, sell your coat and buy one. And as we've mentioned this afternoon, there was the Apostle Paul who carried his message to the very point that he stood as a gladiator and fought beasts at Ephesus. He had to fight against the champions of darkness for such liberties as he possessed, and he bore the marks upon his back of their flogging him and of their punishments, and he had resisted unto blood. But there was nonetheless a determination to expend his life as completely as he could in awakening the people of the race. And he made this rather clear. He was aware, after his heavenly experiences, that this was his first challenge. And he said, the Spirit of God forbade me to go to Asia. That wasn't where he'd find his people. And he went and carried the message which had been given to him and which becomes the apostolic message of the New Testament to the white race in Western Europe. Someone said, well, that's just a coincidence. Yes, coincidences are two things arriving at the right place because of divine destiny. That's incidence. And coincidence is not, my friends, a matter of chance. It's a matter of sovereignty. I point out to you tonight that we have inherited a great culture, and we have watched it go through many transitions. We have had elevated out of our race and selected by patterns of destiny whole lines of leadership. We watched the struggle of the church and its survival as men were raised as champions to defend its right to function, and nations expanded with its vision. We have watched the nations of our race ruled over by aristocracy and by kings. We have watched the kind of loyalty and devotion that moved with an age of chivalry unto administrations and to thrones. We have watched the abuses that can be caused by individuals surrounding areas of influence to create abuses. But if we watch very carefully, we can still see the subtle hands of the same forces that sought to destroy the kingdom and the administration of Christ, seeking to wipe him out in his ministry, were definitely involved in even areas of revolution. For by their subtlety, they created the areas of oppression, and by the weaknesses of men, they dominated areas of leadership to bring about a great unrest among the people. And then they exploited that unrest by sending in the saviors. In the areas of the French Revolution, we can see that we would not stand and approve many of the processes of the things that transpired, but behind it, the Illuminati were conspiring to upset standards, overthrow administrations, crush thrones, topple society, and then gain control over it. Many of those that sought to adapt themselves to these situations became champions of various rights of people, but behind the design was the design to topple authority and gain control. But we see also coming out of that pattern a new age that was being born in the beginning of the application of the machine more and more to the work of people, as it was being co-tined with a sort of industrial revolution that was a byproduct of the technology of white men everywhere that were applying themselves to lighten their burdens. Now we heard the great hue and cry as words were being twisted and semantics were being born. For there was that internal, assimilatable force that was seeking to gain mastery over all the Western world of which you were a part, even over your own colonies that they would not leave alone in those days when out of the great nations of the Western world your race colonized this nation. A great land of raw material with tremendous reservoirs of mineral resources that was still unfound. With a tremendous amount of water and air land that could be tilled, with forests and wealth that left it one of the treasure spots of the earth, and in it there was a virtual pattern of destiny moving the peoples of your race. Whereas you were predominantly an Anglo-Saxon culture, you were made up of the Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Nordic, Basque, Lombard, Germanic peoples of the Western world, reaching out for a greater expression of freedom, and knowing that they were caught in the midst of a struggle that was going on in Europe between a lot of very complex forces. And here in your own nation, as you expanded and developed and grew, and the reservoirs of materials that moved and the pattern of its exchange were not so easy for the enemy to manipulate, those who were seeking the mastery of all Europe and those who wanted to rule the world even used their pressure upon the throne of Britain and upon the king, whose own forces were involved in some of the problems that existed far south of Europe and even into Egypt. And you well know the birth of your own revolution was indirectly caused by the application of patterns of taxation that from behind the scenes international money masters that today finance the revolutions of communism against you were then seeking to apply to get control over this nation and even to use coercion and pressure upon Britain, though it caused them to go to war and you to go to war in the Declaration of Independence. But when we became a nation on the 4th of July in 1776, it was because we had signed a Declaration of Independence and declared that this new nation was born and now established its sovereignty. And this was a document that was to last forever. But I want you to remember that this was a great white Western progress of culture, and it was still a Christian civilization. It was a white one. Inevitably, this nation grew and expanded with these reservoir of resources, and even though the parasites came, and even though the parasites applied themselves by chicanery to your own economy, they were unable to absorb it as fast as you produced it. They were unable to crush down your graceness and your expansion. My, how people could express themselves concerning the bounty of a nation or of a land in which there was so much. And as the people grew and expanded and developed, it still was so much, because they couldn't begin to exhaust and distribute to themselves in the work of initiative they applied themselves the raw materials of so great a society. That's one of the reasons why it is so lately in our own land they look back on 175 years of history and talk about the good old days. Talk about the fact that somehow we've got to get back to those days. I want you to know that the thing that you are fighting against and the force that you're challenged with at this time is not the progress and the expansion, is not the increase in population, it's the unassimilatable forces that have upset the balance in your society and are seeking to subordinate you with a revolution. This isn't a revolution to set you free. This isn't a revolution that follows the pattern of your society. This, my friends, is a process to subordinate you to a supreme superworld mastery. But the danger that is involved in it is not even an autocracy of your own people and of your own kind. It's an insidious force of unassimilatable power that designs to destroy your kind and make this the last generation of your race upon the face of the earth. Their design is to mongrelize your achievement with the peoples of the world that lack both the spiritual vision and the racial capacities for such assimilative adjustment and would make no contribution to your society but to drag you down, fold out your vision, and reduce you as the slaves to this strategy. I hear them writing a new semantic. I glance at popular magazines that used to come into the homes of American women that used to have within them a certain amount of fictional narrative and certain amount of articles that would run along about homemaking and some good recipes and would talk about the development in the care of children, a few things like that. You pick that magazine up today and it doesn't look like it used to look 20 years ago. Today it's filled with the semantics of a revolution that's foreign to you, trying to sell ideas into your society that we've been operating the world wrong and we've been operating America wrong, and there's something that we've got to do. We've got to open up and absorb the world and make sure that our children and our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, don't look as white and as rosy as they did yesterday. They're trying to tell us that in order to face the inevitable trend of the future, and this is what they tell us that future is, that every individual on the face of the earth is now rising up to demand his share of the earth, and you can't resist it. Then the forces of revolution are going out all over the earth, your enemies, and telling the world you're being treated wrongfully. You're not getting your share of the things of the earth. Your have-not nations, because the have-nations are taking it away from you, even though they would be so far removed that all the success of their economy had nothing to do with the areas that are being stirred. The history of the study of the earth will prove that the white race and Christian civilization has contributed and poured out its life and its soul to the ends of the earth. It has given and it has invested, but it has never gathered from the ends of the earth the wealth and the strength of its power. There are certain inevitable things that you must recognize tonight. That these forces and powers that seek to dominate the earth are not interested in the welfare of the Hindu or the African. They're not interested in the welfare of the masses which they direct. They're only using them as pawns in a design to take over the world and to use their now reflected misfortunes, which are based upon their inactivity and lack of initiative, to raise them in emotion as your enemies to threaten and hurl you back with. Today, the powers of the world are arrayed, as we well know, into two sides. They're arrayed between communism and the Western world. Someone said this is a clearly defined issue now. It's Christ and Antichrist. It's communism and the Western world. It's not a clearly defined issue. It is the struggle of the kingdom of God against the powers of darkness. But strangely enough, you can't look at the leadership and those that are gathered around them and define it that easily. Because whereas you are engaged in the struggle against communism, you have some of the same stooges and instruments of the revolution around leadership on your side. And you're not putting up a clear vision of the struggle. You are, in fact, putting up a confused pattern. And the nations around can't tell exactly what your policy is. So today, a small, isolated group of patriots overflooded with the truth. Say, how can you get too much truth? You can get so much truth without any applied thinking upon your part that you rise up with fear. And because in declaring the truth, there wasn't enough of the positive issue of victory applied, and the individual says, see, it's no doubt we're defeated, we're outnumbered, it's all over, this is inevitable, all we can do now is just keep our own thoughts and float along with it. The world, my friends, was never changed by people that floated along with it. Tomorrow that you would like to build will never be built if all the people that are a part of it did nothing about it. And God understands this, so he's not going to let you go along like that. He's going to send waves of energy, and he's going to send forces of spiritual power that will quicken and awaken your society, and they'll rise up to the voices that God sends, and they're going to accept again the pattern which is tomorrow, and they're going to move forward to what is an inevitable wave of the future. Not the wave they tell you of the future. I note that in textbooks which are being used, new ones in our high schools, trying to adapt our young people to one world. I note that one of the new books that's going to be used in geography is United Nations approved, and it doesn't even tell the truth about history, and it has about 75% of all the achievements of mankind drafted out of Africa and out of Asia. You don't have very much that you can be thankful for that came out of Africa and Asia except things you produced and you developed when you went through those areas. But I point out that in this same cause, they are trying to bury both the background and the pattern of race and the long standards of culture and the great spiritual foundations and the heritages of truth, and along with the Supreme Court, they're trying to knock God out of the thinking of the people and out of the pattern of the children's mind, and they're trying to replace it with a supposed new social responsibility, and you could call it a socialist responsibility. In it, they are saying the only way we can solve the world's problems with peace is unselfishly surrender. That this surrendering requires that we all pitch in and help build the houses for those that don't have them. That we've got to go in and plow the fields and Peace Corps our way through all the world. We are told we've got to divide up our substance, and don't worry about starting in on that. You've already given it almost all away, so you don't even have enough material in your own treasury to back up your own money. You're being told that all this is the inevitability of the revolution you cannot fight. Without dealing in personalities, one author out of a family associated with great and brilliant backgrounds of thinking, with responsibility in the Senate, with patterns of resistance against being drawn into an international struggle, speaking and looking out upon the trend, follows the propaganda to say Inevitably, it's the have-not people crying for their share that has produced the rise of world communism, and these communist leaders have exploited this crying request of the people to have their share, successfully organized them, and here it comes. So inevitably, we must realize that irrespective of how we fight, we will never again silence this. One clergyman the other day that's supposed to have known a lot better came out in his magazine and said, "We might as well realize we can't roll back the trend. The Negroes have demanded political and economic equality. They have their support among the thinking peoples within nations. That inevitably no longer will nations be divided by color, nor are they going to be divided by leadership that is recognized on racial levels. It's useless to fight against this. We might as well go along with it." And then he added a verse which is not based, my friends, at all upon anything relative to this. It says, "For God isn't a respecter of persons." And he took that right out of a propaganda sheet that the Communist Party had leveled at his church. And he absorbed it right out of the mouth of a person who didn't even believe in God. That's the cunning of the revolution. Can you imagine God not designating leadership and selecting and choosing by their capacities and not knowing or marking a distinction between peoples when he said, "I've chosen you above all the peoples on the face of the earth"? When God Almighty said to your race, "I've chosen you above all the peoples on the face of the earth," that identifies you as having called you out by name and bestowed upon you eternal life and promised that your spiritual inheritance was permanent. When he refers to his selection of people and he said, "I want the world to know that I have loved thee and thou art my sons and daughters," and the enemy takes some obscure passage, twisted it out of context, and has the preacher ready to call out his whole congregation to retreat and says, "This is the wave of tomorrow." I'm going to tell you that it's not the wave of tomorrow. I want you to recognize today that the powers of darkness have stirred up the lusts and desires and aspirations of people for things that they lack either the intelligence, the vision, or initiative to create. They have moved upon whole areas of the earth in order to stir them up at this hour by promising them that they're going to have an equivalent share of things that they are putting out no energies to achieve. It's most interesting to note that there is no declaration in either United Nations Human Rights Conventions or any of these other areas of international design in the programs of world government that tell you what any of these other peoples are supposed to do to get an equivalent share of these things. It just tells you that you're supposed to divide up and give it to them, and tells you, the creators, what you're supposed to do to keep them off of your back. We are being told that wars are too dangerous to fight, so don't think about keeping what you have by putting a wall around it and then protecting it with your own military. That's what they're telling you. They're telling you that you can't fight or you'll be blown off the earth. They tell you you can't resist because if you resist, then there'll be nothing anyhow to fight over because it'll all be disintegrated, consumed, and burned up. I want you to know that this is an error as well. That your enemy does not and is not in position to wipe you off of the face of the earth, irrespective of what he might say. I am convinced now that if the world communist empires of evil had the ability to nuclear destroy your race and believe they could accomplish the overthrow of your nations and retain the rest of the world, that they would do that, and they'd do that tonight before morning. But they are frightened by potentials of your striking power. And even though they have traitors in high positions and they feel they've overwhelmed areas of your administrative levels, they are very, very much still worried about your people. They're not sure that the army would go along. They're not sure that there might not be such a wave of anger in such a nation as this that before they achieved any results, they would be receiving the retaliation much more deadly than they conceived. As we told you last night, last Sunday, all over your nation, men who served your nation in military capacity, that took the oath to defend it against all its enemies, domestic and foreign, are looking with dim view upon the appeasement policies, the disarmament program, and the accepting of socialism and communism as the inevitable wave of the future. I disagree with Schlesinger and Salinger and Ball and Rusk when these men tell us that some form of socialism and of high bureaucratic control over all the affairs of the earth is inevitable and necessary. You see, the place men surrender is where they think. You might say, then, what does one do? You cannot fight this inevitable. I tell you, that depends on how many you are, where you are. In these United States, again, 145 million of us are white Christians, and the us of the other side represents all of the minorities, unassimilatable forces, enemies of your race, and socialism and communism, and all phases of its policy. I tell you that here we can be victorious. I tell you that out of this victory shall expand over every nation of the white race a victory which will go down in history as one of the great and unprecedented developments. You say, do you think we can roll back to the pre-war years? Who wants to roll back to the pre-war years? There wasn't too much to boast about the pre-war years. You had thousands and millions of people in distress. You had unemployment. You had individuals held in virtue of bureaucratic pressure by a bureaucracy that was controlled by the same unassimilatable forces. We don't want a world crushed with poverty. We don't want to go back to a world dominated by economic overlords of international jewelry. And we don't want to go back to any of the eras of the pre-war years. We, my friends, came out of depression by the great upheaval of war. I point out to you sometimes, however, the intensity of forces involved work on other parts of the world, and these great cataclysms are a part of the transition and change that brings about the development of inner forces for new eras. People had been brainwashed by error. We had been told in the yesterdays before the Great War that nobody understood money. We were told that somehow it was gone. We were told there was no availability of it to start factories to employ men. There was no way to get an economy going. There was no way to create purchasing power so that the American people would want to buy things that American people could produce if they had buyers. And there couldn't be any buying and any moving because there wasn't any money. And we were being told that there was no solution to this. And of course, communism was already trying to fill that vacuum, too. And then in the struggle, they were doing the same thing in Europe. Inside of Germany, they had not only been oppressing, but the same international money masters were holding these people down in a condition of poverty and confiscation. They were responsible there for degeneration of our morals and society. They were spreading their doctrines of evil. They were destroying youth. And it was because of these conditions that there suddenly rose leadership. We may not approve of its political policies. We may not accept the processes of its trend. We may not give assent to all of the uses of energy and idea that gave suddenly great fervor to those people. But I'm going to tell you, the reason why Nazi Germany rose to power was because it wanted to crush an evil that suddenly some of its leadership decided was unreal, and they didn't have to accept it before it destroyed their racial self-respect, before it crushed them down, before it finished them inevitably in slavery. They do something about it, and they rose up and did their best to drive it out. And out of the success with which the people threw off the parasite and the yoke and started to refine foundations of strength and economic power, the encirclement starts as the inevitable battle again comes for mastery. And the same evil power started economic and political encirclement that had invaded your country and had gained sufficient control to even plunge you to depression while they became wealthy at your expense. And World War II was born of this very struggle. Designed to hurl the world and to involve the nations, and the subtlety of evil pattern was to crush this new growing economic strength that was living without jewelry and had established the liberty and freedom again of a Western people no longer bowed by this great conspiracy. Some people said there wasn't any difference between communism and the strength of Nazism or what was going on in Italy. Let me tell you this. The difference between communism, Nazism, and fascism was not only in political policy, but it was in the fact that communism was dominated by international Jewry who conspired to create a super world bureaucracy, destroy all nationalism, all racial self-respect, and give you a mongrelized slave world of utter evil and carry the same concepts that Hollywood presents because of the strange minds that put the picture out before the world. Now, there's one Jew here that doesn't like what I'm saying, but you can take this straight between the eyes. You earned everything you got in Germany, and for trying to destroy the morals of America, take away our faith, our prayer, and our nation, anything you get here, you are going to deserve. If there's some observers that can't clap because of their official capacity, I see that you're either in two brackets. Inside, you have to agree with us, because the facts that we're discussing are very, very polite. You know as well as I do in this country that from depression to a mobilized nation with unprecedented amounts of money, with no longer any depression, factories rolling, mines operating, and money in circulation, was only the matter of the Jews pressing the switch because they wanted this nation to destroy another nation, and from poverty to sudden motivation of activity. And then you discovered that purchasing power could be added or subtracted, and the whole structure of economy was built on a very false premise. Now, I'm going to tell you why you can't go back to the conditions of the war. And this is something that even the international money changer may not understand, because the war proved to the people of this nation that they didn't have to have a depression. It proved to this nation that wealth was the things they created, and money was not to be pegged to a handful of gold or silver metal or to some paper that some individual had their own name on. They discovered that they, in their own name, could establish and print and extend money. And the one thing they're going to discover as they settle this problem, my friends, is a part of tomorrow's wave, and that is that they're not going to pay some bunch of Jews interest on the money they print with their own presses to move the goods they print with their own presses to move the goods they make with their own hands. If there's any mistake that the enemy is making is while he has been talking about himself as progress, he has overlooked the fact that having accomplished an objective, he can't pour it back in yesterday's mold. And the more quickly we understand this, we won't try to pour tomorrow into yesterday's mold, but we'll seize the future and we'll rule it. God has lifted from us a part of the curse that descended upon us for violation of law and a loss of spiritual perception that he promised to restore. He said that we would have to work 6 days a week by the sweat of our brow in order that we would have sustenance until such time as he had restored upon us some of the things we've lost. Here we stand 7,400 years from those historic dates and discover that spiritual inspiration has given us back the ability to understand and out of our technology lay up, harness the rivers to produce great power. We built the greatest dams the world has ever seen. We have learned how to extract out of the earth sources of power and how to refine it to gain more strength. We've learned how to harness the metals and adapt them to our uses. We have learned how to apply both the laws of the fulcrum as the patterns of the gear. We have learned to harness metals, and with our technology, we have reduced all of the basic problems that faced us concerning how to get enough, or how to get it quickly enough that we could sit down and rest, or we could go out and apply ourselves to something else besides just earning our living. God was willing to lift the curse of 6 days, shalt thou labor at the sweat of thy brow, unto the restoration which he had restored from Calvary to now by spirit and inspiration. You say, well, why is it that just here we have nations that we have been able to produce and create? Why is it that none of these other people caught the pattern of these principles of technological engineering and of know-how and of the earth? Because they didn't worship the right God in darkness and superstition and under the tyranny of the forces that ruled them. There was no inspiration that would produce the great technological achievement that God has given you. And with it, he didn't give you a responsibility to take them on your back. Say why? Because if God wills at this moment that all China and all Africa should possess the technological ability, should think the concepts of know-how, should start applying themselves to solving these problems in the necessary way to meet their material needs, there would be a new stimulation and a recreative force, and they'd start to move as Negroes and Chinamen have never moved in 7,400 years of your history on the earth. You say, why? Because if you, my friends, were to turn them loose with these areas of technology, they would immediately use it to try to enslave your society and crush you and wipe out your faith and place the world in a process of degeneration that would end up in a dark age. Someone says, my, it's a terrible thing that Chinese are hungry. Maybe it's a good thing. If China had enough to eat, they'd be marching against you. Say, half of them will die. Well, if half of them die, there'll be less to fight when Armageddon starts. You say, that's cruel. That's not cruel, my friends, when people are a part of the hordes and the massive forces of Antichrist and are still subservient to pagan theology and live with a almost enigmatic expression but a design for confiscation of what you have without creating it. Africa on the march is not Africa in progress. It's Africa reverting to the most brutal areas of cannibalism and satanic background. Their desire is not to absorb your knowledge and work with you to build a better continent. Their desire is to destroy what you built, and their desire is to crush and destroy you, and then revert back to the tyrannical rule of their own forefathers in ruling over these people with their chieftains and with their witch doctors. We have had ample evidence of that in these areas where we have watched the forces of United Nations following the design of communism to make a vacuum, have used their influence, and where that influence has reached out to your Western world and has put its pressure on leadership and you through your balance on the wrong side and drove out white leadership out of these areas of the earth, and the result was catastrophe, mass murder, bloodshed, and degeneration. I can assure you this. When you have a universe plan, when you have the orbits of operation and solar systems planned around the person of the planner, around the power and force which he sends out, this is a God-centered universe, God-centered solar system, a God-centered world with God-centered atoms. And anything that is not God-centered flies out of its orbit and moves into the areas of catastrophe, collision courses, and degeneration. And you can accept it, or you can reject it and refuse it, but it doesn't change the fact. And those that refuse a balance and coordination with life and with its flow of force are themselves casualties and go into a degeneration course. Some of these peoples have been on these courses ages before your race ever walked the earth. And you are their best light, their best hope, and God's purpose for the earth. But it does not come by you accepting Satan's pattern of contest, which he likes to call the wave of the future, and it's not. I tell you that there is a wave of the future. One in which, though they dive into it, it will not stop it. One they cannot stop. One they will not change. I can tell you there is a spiritual wave of power that will so charge and electrify your race, so restore back to it its consciousness of racial self-respect, and such a stern determination that the greatest height of emotion that your race has ever felt, it's going to feel besides the standards of lifting up both that of your culture and your civilization, but your race. You're going to see your youth by the thousands raising up the standard of your flag and determining they're going to defend this race against all the mongrel, Negro mixing, Chinese mixing, Asiatic mixing the world's ever heard of. I haven't got the time tonight to pray out to you all the things that you hear that says it's too late. Way back here in the days when Daniel was inspired to write in the Old Testament, he saw these same situations. If you were to read in the 7th chapter of Daniel, you would discover all these pagan powers rising up. You would see that they were against your race, against the program of God's kingdom. He describes empires and vicious individuals of fierce countenance, dictators, satanic power. He talks about how they would rise to rule with chicanery and cunning, and then suddenly stop. Now, I'm just turning, for instance, to the 7th chapter of the book of Daniel. You know why? because Daniel could see with perspective what was happening, and Daniel could see with prophecy what was going to happen, and he could see what was coming upon the face of the earth as the forces battled the kingdom, and then all of a sudden he'd see the pattern of this red spiritual energy wave, and he'd have to put in what he saw about you. So he tells this terrible story of these forces gathering for power. And then he says, "And I beheld all these thrones were all broken down, and I saw the Ancient of all days, he that was before all things, the Most High God. And I saw him," and he describes his throne, his majesty, and his glory. And he said, "I saw all the fiery flames of the courses of his trails through the universe, and I saw his flying fiery wheels, his great saucer fleet." See, Daniel tells about it. He says, "I saw them go out from before him, and I saw the streams coming out from him 1,000 times, 1,000 times, 10,000 times, 10,000 times, thousands of thousands. I don't know how many trillions that is, but it's enough for me. It overbalances anything in the world that's against your God. Someone said, we have to agree with Mr. Khrushchev. He got up the other day and said, "Oh, we can just mark our time. The whole world's going to be communist and socialist in the next 10 years. And then we listened to Mr. Kennedy, and some people might be very much depressed, and said, "It's getting there faster than that." Then I listened to our enemy say, "But we've got to stop the conservatives. They're too dangerous. They're 31% of the country." And I say, "Well, something else is moving. Listen. If there wasn't something that the enemy's worried about, Mr. Brown wouldn't have talked about the Birch Society yesterday. If there wasn't something he was worried about, he wouldn't talk about stopping all these right-wing extremists. There isn't anything the left-wing's more afraid of than a right-wing extremist. George Washington was one, you know. Do you ever stop to think the difference between a criminal and a hero when you're fighting the power of darkness is merely victory? Every one of the great leaders of the revolution today would have been downgraded, and they would have been marked as criminals that rose up against the course of empire in your history books if they hadn't won. But I want you to know that all the heroes of your race are recorded heroes because they won, but then that was their destiny. They won because of who they are, what they had in them, and what the course of the battle was. If you're going to win this way. Now listen. "And therefore I heard the voice of great words which were uttered by the Eternal. I beheld the beast order with its power was slain as a political force. I saw its political body given to the flames of the destruction of its weapons and of its fortresses. And as concerning all the rest of the world order, I watched their power taken away. I watched their dominion taken away. And I watched their lives reckoned with according to this great pattern of divine justice." Then I drop down here and he says, "And I saw in this narrowed vision of the night, behold, this embodied incarnate God known as the Son of Man, the embodiment of the ancient fullness of time, of the eternal. And I saw that he had before him dominion and glory and a kingdom, and that all people and nations and languages had to serve him, and his dominion was an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his was a kingdom that was not to be destroyed." Now it's fought. Daniel now catches the pattern again of the fight, the power of the darkness. And Daniel said, "I was grieved in my body, and I was troubled in my mind, because I saw the beasts and their evil power and the political gathering of the hordes against my race, my people." And then said, "Just about this time I caught this vision again of the wave of the future, for I saw that the saints, the believing offspring, the white race, the Most High God, are going to take the kingdom, and they're going to possess the kingdom forever and ever." And I dropped down a little way, and I saw these fourth beasts. I saw his teeth, and I saw how he came to devour and how he came to break down. I saw the horn that had eyes and a mouth that spoke great things and looked even more stout than his fellows and spoke out against the people. I saw all this. And then I beheld that this horn of power and kingdom made war against the saints, and was beginning to prevail against them behind the Iron Curtain in the various parts of the earth. And then suddenly he sees the wave again. And I saw the Ancient of Days, and I saw judgment had come. And I saw the power was given to the believing offspring, the white race. And I saw the believing offspring of the Most High as had the time of their victory to rise, and the believing offspring of the Most High possessed the kingdom. Then Daniel goes to work again on the prophecy. And then I can go all through this page, the next one. And he's starting to talk about the terrible things and the powers and the forces on the face of the earth. And he's talking about the fair dealers and the new dealers. And he's talking about the treacherous dealers. And he's talking about the communists and the Khrushchevs. And he's talking about all of the would-be dictators on the conspiratorial side. And every once in a while, he turns right back. But I see something. I see this inevitable victory. The throne of the Most High God. The taking over the race. The rise within destructible power. You see the difference, my friends, between Daniel writing and some of our patriots that are about to throw up the white flag? There is a wave, but don't let them tell you that wave is the inevitability of a socialized world. That wave is the inevitability of the triumph of God's kingdom out of the sheer balance of spiritual force and the ability of that light to throw out the darkness. And when we move into this next generation of time, we're inevitably going to see the tremendous triumph that the kingdom and dominion and greatness of the kingdom upon under the whole heaven and upon the whole earth shall be given to your race, the peoples of the Most High, and this kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. And this again is the 27th verse of the 7th chapter of Daniel. Catch this, think this, feel this. Your whole civilization is based upon the foundation of the Scriptures. In fact, to the Scriptures and to their spread, you owe the greatest expanse of literacy on the face of the earth. Let us point out to you that as we declared in this afternoon's message, we don't have to guess at the opinion of the church or some theologian. We don't have to argue postmillennialism, premillennialism, or is he or is he? All we've got to do is listen to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John as they tell you what Jesus said. All you got to do is listen to what Jesus said about it. He said, I'm going away. If I go away, I'll come again. And when I come again, to the Jews, he said, you'll see me coming in power. I'll overthrow everything that you represent. He says, you'll see me coming, and I'll divide the nations, and I'm going to give to the sheep nations administration of the earth. He said, I'll come with speed like lightning, coming at noonday. The Apostle Paul confirms it as we brought out this afternoon and tells about in his heavenly experience and back how he was told what would happen, and he tells it in every one of his writings and confirms the great hour of victory in which God himself will join his race to reestablish for them racial self-respect. He said, I'm going to even cleanse the blood of this people wherever it's been contaminated. And someone said, God isn't interested in people. Doesn't make any difference whether you're a Hottentot or a Hindu. Don't let anyone tell you that. You don't have an abstract nature God that's a process of evolution. You have a great creative God with personality that's interested in the welfare of the earth, who has begotten a household in the earth and has determined that they're going to conform to righteousness, which is the only course of good. Let me point out something to you. The book of Revelation contains certain things concerning your race and concerning the struggles. It tells you here that out of the dragon's mouth and out of the seed of the serpent and out of the Luciferian forces and his offspring, which you'll find in their synagogues all over the world, a struggle comes against you, the people of God, that have the testimony of Jesus Christ and the commandments of God. That out of the dragon's mouth this blood pours up to swallow you up in the earth. And then you read this, and you discover that Revelation follows this with triumph and with victory. And it demonstrates that unto your race is given the two wings of a great eagle, and one of these days you're going to get a president, too. Now, I'm not going to attempt in the next 10 minutes to tell you all the things the book of Revelation unveiled to John about great cataclysmic forces, great struggles that move here and there on the earth, but always trying to destroy your race and always your race surviving. I'm just going to step across to what the wave of the future brings in. A new order in the heavens and earth. A new power in the earth. And the great spiritual city of administration is going to be made up of the nations of your race. the sheep nations of Matthew, the Christ's declaration. And I beheld the very body of God was also down here with men. And I'll tell you about the new water, not poured to an old mold. Was poured to a new one. Not poverty, but plenty. Not depression, but prosperity. Not ignorance, but understanding, knowing even as he knew. I'm going to tell you something. If you're a mortician, it may be necessary now, but you better learn another trade. Because there's not going to be any more tears, there's not going to be any more crying, because your race isn't going to have any more death. Well, you say that's going to be too much because soon we'll overpopulate the earth. No, you've got the whole universe out there and the ways to come and go, because this is not going to be withheld from you. Besides, they're looking at all that empty space up there in Montana and Wyoming and Idaho, and the United Nations wants to populate it with 40 million Hindus. My friends, there's a lot of room for expansion, so don't worry about it the next few years. Just determine that you're going to populate America and not India. And when I saw all these things and saw with it that pain had passed away, and I saw that it was declared, behold, I make all things new. The most progressive period in human history is ahead. New frontierism is in progress. It's a reversion to age-old tyrannies of bureaucracy and economic fallacy. You know what it offers your race? It offers you slavery, to work for the world free, and then be destroyed in slavery by it and absorbed in it in future generations. You know what the kingdom of God offers? Leadership that will direct the world into its greatest era and cause them to bow the knee. I'll show you what the wave of the future is. And I heard the great voice of the seventh angel sound his trumpet, saying, the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. That's why it says these things will happen at the last trump, because this is the last one. Communism is having its day of rising assault against God's kingdom. It's having its attempt to mesmerize the people and give them a pattern of defeat. Learn its technique, learn its process, but don't be overcome by its evil. Don't try to adapt its error, because it's no solution. And if they were as successful in its process as they believe themselves to be, instead of battling for you, they'd make all of Asia and all of the Soviet Union such a prosperous heaven on earth that nobody'd want to get out of it anyhow. The only reason why they want to conquer the rest of the world is because they know that what they're talking about is phony. It's only made to gather masses by false promises and to gain control of the earth with a super bureaucracy that they believe, as long as they exploit it, will work until everything's gone. So this is the hour. Now inevitably the waves wash upon the shore. They wash also in the patterns of divine energy, but God has thrust something into this environment. I want you to realize that Christ-centeredness is the most important thing you can understand. As the Spirit that dwells in you is begotten of the Father, it's Christ in you that's the hope of power, glory, knowledge, wisdom, revelation. Not another Christ, you. I want you to know that God wasn't taking any chances when he sent you into the earth. It wasn't an evolution, it was a recreation, and that's your job. I don't want you to be squeamish about the enemy. I'm going to tell you this, that the wave of the future is not declaring, but there are some that understand it. All the trouble that is besetting you, the invasions and the Trojan horses that have come into your country, come from an unassimilatable people that don't even belong upon the earth. They're a mutation, an evil, unassimilatable offspring of Lucifer. And the best thing to do is release this distorted and distraught spirit who, in the frustration of their evil, carry out the objectives, the catastrophe. The best thing you can do with them is get them back in the plane where they belong. And let somebody handle them in that dimension that knows how. Now there's one person going to carry a message just as fast as he can back to the agencies that will carry it through and say he advocated the liquidation of the enemy. No. I just told you the best thing that can happen to them is get them back where they belong. They don't belong here. What they've got planned for you and for conservatives like you is your liquidation. Jesus said, when I come into this picture, I'm going to take the sickle and I'm going to reap. I'm going to take these grapes of wrath and judgment that have been long overdue, and I'm going to press them down with defeat. The blood may flow to the horse's bits, but it'll have a purifying factor. Now, let me assure you this. So what's happening across America as the right wing wakes up, as the enemy oppressively talks about doing away with them, putting them in mental hospitals, sterilizing them, even giving them mercy killings, as one of their commentators had the nerve to put even in the Times. America is going to rise up with determination that the only way they can be free from the parasites that have destroyed and the forces that have demoralized is to remove the enemy. Someone says, suppose we deported all the people that we could deport legally out of the United States that don't belong here. Would that be good? That'd be very good, but you get ready to fight because they'll try to encircle you and come back and destroy you for having killed them all in gas ovens. Before you get through, you're going to have to destroy the enemy that would destroy the earth. Now, I don't mean all Africans, all Asiatics. They're but tools and pawns that the powers of darkness use. You know, there is no greater picture of majesty and light and glory than that hour which is ahead. An hour of revelation, of light, and of power that has never been equal to the earth. And I'm going to tell you, just as surely as you farthest westward take the last challenge as it's now moving, before the climax of this day, your youth are going to march. Before the climax of this day, your people are going to raise the standards of a race of a faith. Before you've gone very far, they're not going to care who says they're antisocial or who says this isn't acceptable on the level of the way they now want you to think, that you don't stand for your faith, but you absorb them all. The day's going to come when you're going to proclaim Christ and Christianity, whether the Buddhists like it, whether the Hindus like it, whether the Negroes or the Jews like it, or whether they all go home. Your greatest enemy is the person that says to you tonight, the wave of the future is before us, it's too late. It's not too late. They've just been pretty sound asleep. I'm not talking out of hope, without faith, without foundation. What we have declared to you, prophets, hundreds of years before Christ, and then Christ embodied the fullness of God, told you with his lips, and then out of the revelation of tomorrows, into which he took John into the pattern of tomorrows in formation, he showed him the course of history. Tomorrow's wave is a Christian controlled and ruled world with every pagan learning the truths about God and about the face of the earth. That's tomorrow. You say, always war. No, there's going to be a time when these nations are not going to learn war anymore. And instead of the United Nations police force, it's going to be the kingdom of God on earth that's going to enforce the law. They're not going to put Mongols in here. They're going to be white men carrying light to the ends of the earth. So we point this out to you tonight. Teach it, look for it, animate it, participate in it, challenge your youth, raise your standards, cleanse your land. There's enough of it that you can do anything that you have the vision to do. Don't say we can't resist the wave. Your co-creators make the wave. You'll get the spiritual strength to accomplish its victories. You're in a period that many people do not know the depth of it. We were in San Francisco. We were in Oakland and Fresno this week. Powers of darkness prove how unrealistic, but how determined they are to smirk and destroy your standards of society. People live all over San Francisco. There are areas of that city where everybody there is white. They've been that way for generations. There are areas where they settled and built their exclusive communities to keep and preserve their culture and the association of their children. There are areas where during the war and by political manipulation, the weakness of leadership, they built great masses of Negro population. Most of them were in Oakland, a few of them in certain isolated areas around San Francisco. There is one school in San Francisco where 60% today of that school are Negro and 40% are white. You say, what can they do about it? Well, about all they can do about it, the 40% move out into white communities, but that's not enough. Stirred by the same commie masters and the same Jew interference and by the same leaders, the NAACP demanded of the Board of Education in San Francisco that they provide buses and they scatter this 60% Negro population in this one school into every school in San Francisco. Now think that over. You say, well, why is it they go to that expense? It means buses, it means costs, it means moving them out of proximity to their homes. That's because this is a part of the satanic design to destroy. And they went so far as to say, now we demand this, and they browbeat the Board of Education, and they told them they were going to go to the Attorney General, and they were going to cry discrimination, and they wanted the fullness of Supreme Court design carried out, and as far as those nine evil old men are concerned, they'd like to see you put niggers in every school and every bed. Now I point this out. Finally, the school gave in. You know they're going to San Francisco carry those syphilitic Negroes to every part of the city? Did you know that nurses inside of these Negro schools say that over half of them are carrying venereal disease? You know that they are virtual moral lepers with no moral perception because they don't have the spiritual capacity and their soulishness revolves around the areas of the animal and gives the depravity of the Jew and the way he's seeking to incite the race. He's seeking to set a false wave of concepts of living until it becomes acceptable and he takes this black blotch and ruins the bloodline of your entire race and brings by the patterns of vibration and suggestion he places before your race an acceptance of this way of life. I tell you, it's time white men stood on their feet and the Christian church declared war on Jewish depravity, Negro race mixing, if we have to spill blood from one end of the nation to the other to keep it clear. Of Mill Valley, Marin County, just across the bay. Selma Pius High School already has had a partial infiltration because of a housing project filled with Negroes working in defense industries during the war. Now they've torn them down and made most beautiful apartment houses out of them and put these people back in. But they went so far as to not only continue their depravity, but they've started something. I talked to some young people in that area not so long ago. They said, well, they're behaving themselves. There's nothing happening. We don't have to worry about it. More of them are moving in. But these have behaved themselves. They apply themselves. They try to be good students, and they're trying to be... All of a sudden, it happened. All of a sudden, Negro boys formed circles around white girls, and they were raped there behind a wall of black Negroes, and nobody could get through. And when white boys tried to defend them, they were picked up and arrested and charged with disturbing the peace. The other day, while... in an after motion picture show, a group of young people were inside a restaurant and cafe, and they were seated there, and the Negroes came in and attacked them. And they fought back, but they were outnumbered, badly beaten, and hit with chains and clubs. They went outside and armed themselves, and the whites counterattacked. So the police department, for fear of the Negroes, said, this is off bounds, and so this place that was always a white shop and a white ice cream parlor is now has not permitted to have any white children come in it and have to accept nothing but black customers. The police don't like it, but that, my friends, is an infiltration at the levels of administration inside of Marin County. Now, the reason why I point this out is because now I discover an explosive situation. I find an angry group of people. I find whites coming to life. You see how this wave of the enemy's design can suddenly spark with spiritual energizing a great flame of determination that we're going to preserve our self-respect and our God-given destiny? White children should go to school with ball bats and solve this situation when the school buses arrive. You know, there's one thing. Just as the Acts of the Apostles were the things they did, You're going to hear one of these days about the acts of the kingdom as the children of spirit with indignation rise up to accomplish the deliverance of their nation. You came into being with action, not words. And you're going to once more see the resurrection of Christian civilization with action, not words, until your leaders are going to do as British leaders did, deport that which is out of color and out of race and out of background for the preservation of their nation. This is the inevitable way. God will transfer it, will catalyze it. Now you say, well, people won't react to this. People are against it. The antisocial process is gone. Let me tell you something. We haven't talked to anybody in the last year. We haven't moved among any people in any part of the nation, and we haven't reached anybody or these states as they move out and reach people and we get the letters back. Everywhere, they react just like you're reacting here. Now, all we need is communication to put this thing together. This book says it's going to go together all over the earth. This is tomorrow's way. The saints of the Most High God shall take the kingdom, and they shall preserve it, and they shall administrate it forever. We're going to be speaking next Friday night on the blueprint of world events, again, as they relate to biblical prophecies. We take the news of the week and translate it into reality. Reality of thus saith the Lord, with an understanding behind the news that only the Spirit can bring. Next Sunday afternoon, we're going to talk to you about the Christian's responsibility in the day of the Lord, with a full knowledge, of course, of where we are and what about is about to happen. Christian's responsibility in the day of the Lord. This is one of the most significant and important things upon which men can think, in which their blueprint and purpose is God-directed. Never was a period where this is more important. Next Sunday night, we're again going to talk to you upon the pattern of purpose. We're going to talk to you again on the destiny of your race, because what can't be finished, we must say next week. And out of it's going to come the facets of a background of experience and record, and of report as it relates to your earth, and as it reports as it relates to the purpose that God will stimulate. So we're going to talk about the destiny of the white race next Sunday evening.